I grew up in the Fort Washakie area, the Wind River Indian Reservation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was born and raised there. I've been away in terms of boarding schools and also my stint in the Army.
Hello, I'm Emmy DeGrappa. Each week, we bring you stories asking our guest the question, why? We learn about their passion, why they do what they do, why should we care, and what can we learn? What better place to explore the human landscape than from the state known for its incredible landscapes, Wyoming? And what better organization than Wyoming Humanities, serving our state for over 45 years? We share stories, ideas, and wisdom about the human experience. This is What's Your Why? Today, we are talking to Ivan Posey. He is a tribal leader and the tribal education coordinator for Central Wyoming College. Welcome, Ivan.
Hey, good morning.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Fort Washakie area, the Wind River Indian Reservation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was born and raised there. I've been away in terms of boarding schools and also my stint in the Army. And lived in Denver for a couple of years with my sister, but home's always been the Wind River Reservation.
So is that where you were born?
It was. I was born in Lander, Wyoming.
Okay. And when you say you spent time away from there when you went to boarding school, what boarding school was that? Where was that?
It was two different boarding schools. I attended Chilocco Indian Boarding School in Chilocco, Oklahoma, which closed in 1982. And also I attended one semester in Flandreau, South Dakota, which is Flandreau Indian School, in the fall of 76.
Okay. What tribes do you belong to?
My dad is Shoshone and Arapaho, and my mom is Northern Cheyenne.
And so what do you think are the big misunderstandings between the Native Americans and quote-unquote white people who are non-natives, basically?
I think there's always been a disconnect in terms of just the education about ourselves. You know, a lot of people don't really know what makes us Indian, which will be some we'll talk about later on today. I think, you know, if you go through the federal agencies that deal with tribal people, you have to use your, as we call a CIB, which is Certificate of Indian Blood. But if you apply for a job with the Forest Service or Park Service, all you got to do is check the box and you're Indian. So I think in terms of some of the census, the national census, and some of those numbers are kind of skewed because anybody could claim Indian to be counted.
Oh, that's interesting. When you grew up on the reservation and your father is what, Shoshone Arapaho, what is
yes.
he?
Yes, yes, he's Shoshone and Arapaho.
Oh, he's Shoshone and Arapaho.
He's Shoshone and Arapaho. His dad was Arapaho and his mom was Shoshone.
And how about your mother?
My mother was a full-blood Northern Cheyenne from Lame Deer, Montana.
Okay.
The Northern Cheyenne Reservation.
And so obviously when you check a box... That says something. That should be saying something, that you either are from a reservation or are born in a tribe, don't you think? That should be the...
Yeah, or at least some process just to kind of prove that, I guess. You know, we have to prove it to everybody within our own tribal people. You know, like I said, I could pull out my tribal identification card and it has three-quarter Shoshone. You know, and they didn't include the Arapaho blood back then when I was born. So it really would have been four forests, basically, if they counted the Arapaho blood. So what they did is what they did was count half of my mom's Cheyenne blood and half of my dad's Shoshone blood, which made me three quarters. You know, so it's kind of complicated, and that's something that some tribes have gone to descendancy, but some tribes still uphold that quarter-degree Indian blood to be a citizen of that tribe.
Right, right. And as time goes on and as people intermarry,
mm-hmm.
how do you deal with that on the reservation?
Our enrollment ordinance for the Shoshone tribe changed in 1993, and it's changed over time since it's been implemented. But now they could count the mother's blood like they did with my mom. You know, sometimes at some point, if a Shoshone lady married outside of the Shoshone tribe, their kids had to go with that father's tribe. So if they married a Northern Cheyenne or they married a Navajo, those kids had to be enrolled in that tribe. So that's changed over time, where they could count other blood from other tribes.
And what was your desire to go to college? Because I know there is, maybe it's not a stigma, maybe it is, I don't know what you would call it, but that the Native Americans really value that their kids stay close to home. Does that keep them from going to college, or what do you think are the obstacles?
Well, I think, you know, I was a non-traditional student. I didn't start college till I was 31. You know, I went to boarding school, I came out, and I went to the service. Started my career at the Forest Service, and started my career later on. I think with the younger people, there's life just happens on a reservation. You know, there's obstacles, there's some instances, some poverty issues, sometimes substance abuse issues, and life interferes with that process. And I think when those are prevalent in a tribal member's life, education is probably the furthest thing that they're thinking about. They're thinking more about survival from day to day, whether it's for their kids or... But I think that process is slowly changing, you know, with support systems. Colleges like Central Wyoming College are looking at ways to assist students that may have substance abuse issues and having counselors at the campus and those types of things. So I think that culture is changing, that there's more of a support system.
Tell me, what is your success story?
My success story is I'm still here. I'm able to contribute back to my tribe and tribes, and be able to share the educational information that not only our tribal people need, but also non-tribal people need to know about us. And I think there's a reason. I have a good brother. His name was Bunny Shoyo, and he passed away about 5 years ago, but he used to always tell me things will work out the way they're supposed to. And I think that's what happened.
Oh, that's a great message.
Yes.
What was your desire to continue your education and go to school?
I had to take classes to further my advancement in the Forest Service, and I just kind of grasped on. I was selected as a Kellogg Fellow through Americans for Indian Opportunity at that time. And that's what kind of propelled me to serve in public service with the Tribal Council. And that was way back in 94, and I served until 2016. And just been a piecemeal process in terms of education, not only westernized education, mm-hmm. but more cultural, traditional type of education that was talked about by my mom and uncles and stuff like that. So that's been very helpful, or just as helpful to me in terms of what message I like to project to
right.
tribal people and non-tribal people.
Did you have to go back to the reservation and relearn your cultural roots and heritage?
No, you know, we've always been connected as a family, you know, to some of our ceremonial stuff. You know, when I went to boarding school, that was predominantly all tribal people, but from different tribes. So there was always that connection. While I worked for the Forest Service, I lived on a reservation and stayed at Du Bois where I worked then. When I lived in Denver, there was a big Indian urban community there that my sister was very well connected to, so I've always been connected that way. I never had to, I felt not reconnect, you know, so it's been a blessing to me.
What is it like when you consider that the Wind River Reservation is a sovereign nation? What does that mean?
That's the ability to govern for yourself, make your own laws, you know, make your own enrollment. You know, there's been enrollment that has been a big issue with many tribes over the past 20, 30 years. That went to federal court, and it was decided that by the federal courts, I said, that's a tribal issue. That's a sovereignty issue. You guys have to decide who belongs to your tribe based on your qualifications. There's also the land issues. You know, there's water rights. Wind River got the water decree in 1991. You know, so it's the ability to govern yourselves, create your own laws, and to kind of map and chart your own way.
But doesn't the federal government still oversee, or do you make independent decisions that are outside of our federal government?
There are some where that need some federal government approval. With us here on Wind River, we're both governed by General Council Forum, which is a quorum of people that get together, enrolled people that are 18 years and older that give direction. Some tribes that adopted constitutions in 1934 under the Indian Reorganization Act we opted not to do that in either tribe. So some of those tribes that opted to have constitutions, they do have to have more approval from the federal government, the assistant secretary, and all this whole process to get stuff done. So on the Wind River, we actually have a better method of doing that. But over the years, we see some of those quorums that establish the general council going lower. You know, people don't want to participate, and it's kind of, we're at a crossroads in terms of governance in our tribes of how we keep that system going.
Well, that's a lot of work. What is your greatest love of growing up on the reservation that me or anyone who's never experienced that life can appreciate?
You know, I think with me personally, you know, I was the youngest of 13 children, and we was raised on North Fork there in the Fort Washakie area in a four-room house. Had no running water, didn't have no indoor plumbing. We didn't get indoor plumbing until, or access to indoor plumbing until 1971. You know, just the connection we had to other families, because everybody was poor then. You know, when President Johnson was president, he did the war on poverty in 1967. And he sent a lot of people out to Indian reservations. They came back with a report and said, these Indians live in extreme poverty. Of course, we didn't know that because that was just the way we was raised. And I think there's a beauty in something that happens with being raised like that, being poor, being able to struggle, and some of those types of things is just the way we was raised. But families back then were very close. Whole families would visit each other. We'd go down to the river and haul our own water. And, you know, but that's just the way it was. And I think I was blessed to be raised in that era where those, you know, you develop more love for your people and, you know, your relatives and stuff like that. So I think it's there's beauty in that poverty. I heard somebody say that in some place where they said there's beauty in that poverty, but there was. We didn't always in poverty, but there was beauty being raised like in that era.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for sharing that. That You're is welcome. A true bond and love for the land, right?
Yes. And families.
And families.
Yes.
And the people that you grew up with and yes. share your life with.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here today.
Oh, thank you very much, Emmy. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us for this episode of What's Your Why, a production of Think Why, Wyoming Humanities. This has been executive producer Emmy DeGrappa. Please subscribe and never miss a show. For more information, go to thinkwhy.org.